With the 50th anniversary of Stonewall just gaze away, everyone's ready to party like it's 1969. So gather your rhinestone-covered bricks, because this year, it's gonna be a riot.
Today, Peaches Christ joins us to take a look at Pride 50 and the new interest in drag from the early 90s, from TV shows like Pose, HBO's Wig documentary, and Ms. Black for President, now playing at the Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago.
Peaches Christ is currently in more documentary films than anyone else at the Frameline Film Festival, including You Don't Know Me, Tracing the History and Impact of the Film Showgirls, and Verasphere, a love story in costume, celebrating the great costume traditions of San Francisco.
Listen as Peaches gives us a look at all these great upcoming films and moving parts. Trixie Mattel's new documentary that shows her personal and professional challenges, including Katya's breakdown during the taping of the Trixie and Katya show.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fierce, fabulous people just like you. Get access to secret podcasts and sneak peeks into our videos at our Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun, or become a member and access everything at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello?
Hello, is this the Jizz Mopper residence?
Why, yes it is. Do you have jizz that needs to be mopped?
Always. Plentitudes. You might want to get a shop vac.
I never thought about it. In that movie, you're of course referring to my first motion picture.
Yeah?
Jizz Mopper. I never thought about it, but it's about a guy who cleans up jizz. But I play a drag queen in it. It could also have been about me stealing people's jizz.
Oh, because mopping is also stealing.
Right. Oh, my God. We have to make a sequel. And I'm a cum thief. I'm a cum burglar.
Well, I tell you, I actually think about that movie, even though I've never seen it. I think about it quite often. Anytime I have to clean up duty myself to do it, I'm like, here I am, mopping it up
right.
Again.
Yeah.
Happy Pride, Jizz Mopper, Peaches Christ.
Thank you. Happy Pride, you guys.
Can you believe it's been 50 years?
Yeah, you were there at the very first one, right?
Yeah, and
I was before that. I mean, a lot of people are crediting Stonewall with, you know, doing being the first of this or the first of that. And I think we all agree it really did launch the movement. But it's been interesting to see these other, a lot of them in California.
Sure.
Other rebellions that took place before Stonewall. And you know, I was there for all of them. I threw the bricks.
You
and
threw the brick,
you know.
And that first brick was Lady Bunny, right?
Yeah. I was looking around for a brick. I saw her face and I just threw it, you know?
You know, we stumble upon this photo of... Hi, Peaches, by the way. This is Fausto.
Hi.
We stumble upon this photo of Lady Bunny... Really, like, early photo of her.
1985.
So
2 years after she moved to New York, I think.
Real young, super skinny, super horny with a...
A bulge.
Like a big bulge.
Untucked.
Yeah. Untucked.
She's in a history book, uncredited.
Yes, you guys sent me that.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw the photo, and it's definitely her. You know, and that's what's so interesting is that they had that... Because let's face it... Lady Bunny is a living legend in the truest sense of the word. You know, like really, I mean, as much as we love to tease her, she is at this point someone that should just be worshipped and revered and celebrated, you know.
Yeah, she's an elder because she's old.
She is. I mean,
of our community, though, but she's a leader too, you know.
And she's wise. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that bunny is no dummy.
Well, she was raised a Quaker, which are peaceful people.
You know. She was raised a Quaker, but
by the Quaker Oats man herself.
I'm seriously.
I don't know
if
you guys are not capable of saying something nice about Lady Bunny without throwing a little shade. Just
I'm
on
trying.
Top of
it. I'm really trying.
It's impossible to talk about Lady Bunny without sounding or thinking or talking like Lady Bunny.
I think that I just have so much affinity for her truly right now, for whatever reason, I think a lot of it has to do with the documentary Wig coming out on HBO.
It's out. I saw it.
We saw it.
Yeah, I watched it. We watched it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I texted her afterwards because I don't know what my expectations were. I think because I had heard, you know, it was screened at film festivals and people felt the need to tell me immediately that I wasn't in it.
You had one. They showed you. They showed you half and drag.
Yeah, I'm in it for like a second.
Yeah.
And I'm actually totally fine with that. I think whenever you do anything like that, you should not expect to make the final cut, you know? Mm-hmm. That being said, I, for whatever reason, didn't have the highest expectations for the film. Mm-hmm. And I actually really loved it. And what I really appreciated more than anything was the archival footage.
Without a doubt.
Oh, it was amazing. And you just realize, like, I don't know. I texted her afterwards and I said, I really loved the movie. And honestly, I kind of hope that there's just a Lady Bunny documentary someday, like not a Wigstock documentary, really, I think Bunny at this point deserves an entire film about her and her contributions and her life, because she's just amazing. Yeah. She's one of a kind.
Without a doubt. It should be on the IMAX screen, just so you can fit her all in. But you know, the thing about
that archival... Jumbotron, Cinerama.
That archival film stuff was shot mostly by her roommate, Nelson Sullivan. He lived with them and was filming them a lot and their antics everywhere. And unfortunately, he quit his day job so that he could work on a cable access show using all that film footage. And then he had a heart attack and died at, like, in his early 40s. So it's just, you know, it's a shame that, you know, he wasn't able to continue on that path, because imagine the stuff that has been lost just because he's not around to have it.
Yeah.
Well, and it's a credit to
listeners.
Uh-huh. Sorry, go ahead.
For listeners that don't know, if you want to see some of that footage, a lot of it is on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And so you can just, you know, if you don't have HBO, but you want to check out this Nelson Sullivan footage of New York in the 80s and early 90s, you know, just look it up on YouTube. It's mm-hmm. fascinating.
Lady Bunny did tell us that she did get a little annoyed with him sometimes because he'd be filming her in the apartment and she'd just like, turn that fucking thing off.
Fag, will you turn off that camera?
Now, my friend Robert Coddington actually worked extensively in digitizing a lot of Nelson's footage. Mm-hmm. And let me put it this way. He's been working on that project and other people on just getting Nelson's footage into the digital space for probably 20 years.
Yeah. Since we knew him in like 1999, 2000, right?
So this has been a project that's been ongoing, and World of Wonder has been working a lot on it. Robert's been working on it and some other people. And it's just a labor of love and a testament to the magic of that very delicate time period. And that's what's so exciting about Wig and Pose and all these sort of shows that are, you know, here in Chicago, Miss Black for President's running at the Steppenwolf. And it's just great to see our formative years as young drag queens being celebrated and being sort of revered by society again.
It is. It's like great. I mean, I feel like when the Coquettes documentary came out when I was, you know, much, much younger, it was so important for me to be able to see what these people had done decades before. And I feel like we're enjoying that now with young people discovering what drag queens were up to in the 80s and 90s. It's very nice. Mm. Did you know that Lady Bunny was banned from Twitter?
She was for a short time, right? And then they...
Oh, I didn't know she was reinstated, but I guess
everybody tweeted them. I was like, oh, you guys, come on, what the fuck's going on?
If you're
going
to let Trump be on Twitter, but not Lady Bunny, that says it all, basically.
She did call Bianca Del Rio a lezzy, you know?
Well, she keeps trying to get Bianca Del Rio booked at a gig in the Dominican Republic, too, which is weird, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, you know, all those people are dying down there, right?
Of course.
Her plane's going to land safely in Syria.
That made the cut in the documentary.
It did. She's made that joke. The first time I heard her do that joke was on a red carpet interview we did with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you're going to be working this joke for the next 5 or 6 years, aren't you?
You know, if you got a good joke, you just run with it, right?
Right.
Keep going and keep going.
Yeah. In fact, I think it was the first time she ever actually said it was on camera. And it just like, because there were people off camera like laughing about it. And then she started doing it again on stage. Mm-hmm. And after that, she just, it was like her thing with Bianca about, you know.
Well, she's really trying to murder her.
Well, it's great because, you know, like Lady Bunny and Bianca Del Rio have this wonderful relationship that sort of very similar to you and
Heclina.
You know, mm-hmm. it's this like deep friendship that goes back years. And what's really fun is to see you guys on stage sort of razzing each other up.
Yeah, I mean, that. I guess, again, maybe that's generational, but like that was a big part of drag culture. You know, when I was coming up was like you accepted that you walked onto that stage and you could not have hurt feelings. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't something that you were allowed to do. And in many ways, it took the power away from something that maybe in the past would have offended you or upset you. I loved it because it was kind of like, well, okay, bring it on. Call me ugly. Call me a clown. Call me fat. Call me, you know, talentless.
Keep going.
Whatever.
Keep going. Just,
yeah, no, all keep going. Of it. All of it.
Keep
well, you
going.
Get used to it. It's all the go-tos. And, you know, let's face it. We use the same things against you. I mean, yeah. we even call Bianca fat. You know, mm-hmm. it's like it doesn't matter. You know, it's all stupid. But people love it. They love that sort of like shade where you're ripping each other to shreds. But the audience knew that we weren't hurting each other. Mm. It was comedy. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, you know, I hate to say it. I mean, Heclita and I were doing a show last Saturday together where we were kind of reading the audience for being sensitive, you know. And I think we've now gotten to the point where the audience accepts the fact that we don't like the fact that they're so sensitive. And there was this young queen in the front. Her name was Jelly Jellyfish, who threw a fit when she didn't win the Miss Star Search pageant. She just was very visibly upset about it. And she volunteered to get up on stage for this ABBA lip sync contest we did. We did an ABBA tribute night. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she was terrible. Heclina said,
oh my goodness,
get up on stage if you know the lyrics to ABBA songs. Mm-hmm. If you don't know the lyrics, don't bother getting up on stage. So who gets up on stage? Three millennials who don't know the lyrics to ABBA songs.
Mm-hmm. You said the M word.
Am I not allowed to? That's what they're called, right? Is it a bad word?
Young, you know, youth.
But, okay, so the three young people. And so when they didn't know the lyrics, you know, we reread them. And then the audience turned on us for reading them. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. You're at a drag show. If mm-hmm. you get up on stage and you don't know the lyrics to, you know, Fernando, you deserve to be read.
It's what we call in the business world core competency. If you don't have the core competency, then why are you doing it?
Absolutely. So then we really went in on Jelly Jellyfish to make a point. We brought her back up on stage. We called her talentless and awful. And as the audience was, you know, really getting more and more upset, you know, it made us go further. You know, I was saying things like, if you see this person on the street, you know, smack her, spit in her face. This drag queen deserves nothing. You know, and it was like, and the more the audience took us seriously, the deeper in Heclina and I went, you know.
I love it. So how did Jellyfish take it in the end?
She was in on it. We okay. knew because we're friends with, like, she works with, she's a dresser at Peaches mm-hmm. Christ Productions. Mm-hmm. She's totally got a wicked sense of humor. She really loves me and Heclina. And she even posted later, like, you know, I feel like I've just been hazed into the best sorority, you know. So, you know, she totally gets it. Mm-hmm. And we knew that she got it. We wouldn't bring up some sensitive, you know, little baby mm-hmm. to, you know, make fun of. We knew that we were making fun of someone that was in on the joke. But it's just funny to me that, like, a lot of the audience, you know, was like, well, that made me very uncomfortable.
Awkward, right? Young people have a hard time being uncomfortable.
Well, they also think that it's okay that you don't know the lyrics to the ABBA song. Like, they literally think, well, you still deserve a prize because you stood up and you tried something. It's like, no.
I don't know. There was plenty of watermelon, cantaloupe in the early 90s, too. And
but Queen's got red for that.
Mm-hmm. You
That's
know,
the point.
I don't know necessarily. Sure. Like the shows that I saw, part of it was like just people were like, it was like more like an open mic. And so people would go and perform, and if they didn't do well, the audience wouldn't applaud. But the hosts were usually generally very polite.
So it sounded like they boring were drag shows to me.
Well, you know, it's part of it is like because of a shade culture, you know, because we see it on television. I think, you know, and in the general public, people were more comfortable. But I remember very much being shady to other drag queens in the early 90s and getting into trouble for it. And I remember, I mean, should I tell this story? I can't tell the details of the story, but this one drag queen to this day will not talk to me. Because she performed on stage, and I just made a really sweet
she
comment.
She looked like she was in a scuba suit, but it had some white markings on it, and Fausto said...
I said she looks like she's a star attraction, like a trainer that rides the killer whales at SeaWorld.
But it was kind of confusing, because she thought you called her a big fat whale.
Yeah, and I wasn't doing that at all, you know? But she was furious about
that. Were you
that.
In drag?
Yes! Full drag.
Some people have no sense of humor.
I think part of it is that we have a lot of complicated things to unsort right now because we're still alive. Mm-hmm. Whereas our generation in the past wasn't so lucky to be around to sort of inform us of our experiences. But even, you know, our own experience and our own memories are colored by, you know, the nostalgia of the past. And just like watching Pose, you know, that part of it is like some aspects of the show are very glamorous and other parts of the show are very exaggerated to look very difficult and heart wrenching, you know?
Well, don't you dare offer any spoilers from episode 3 of season 2 because I have not seen it yet.
How have you not seen it yet?
It's the best episode.
I am a you will very, know exact- very busy person. Okay.
As soon as you start watching it, you will know exactly what it references. And it's something that you and I have and Fausto have talked about on this podcast many times. It is one of the highlights of the whole ball culture.
Yes.
It is everything. And I don't know if after this episode they can ever
I'm
top it.
I'm guessing it's the mummy best. In the closet.
It is.
No, I spoiled it. But I how could I possibly have spoiled it? I haven't seen it yet.
It is so... delicious. It is so wonderful.
I swear to God, Pose is like the gift we didn't know we ever needed. Mm-hmm. It's so incredible. I mean, of course we knew we needed queer stories told by queer people. We needed trans people on TV. Of course we knew that. But Pose is just better. And you know, it's not perfect. That's the other thing I love about it. It's far from being perfect. Mm-hmm. But it is fabulous and it's just delicious and I love it. I just love it so much. It's my favorite show. I mean, I just can't get over how great it is. I loved season one so much that Nihat and I went back and watched the entire thing again. We never do that. We never watch a season of television and then decide we need to watch it again, you know, it's just amazing.
It rewards repeated views. Mm-hmm. And that way you can remember all the lines like, oh, Peaches, I see you're wearing your favorite lipstick. Sperm.
Okay, so I watched season
lip
two.
Gloss. Sorry, I fucked that up.
Right.
I'm not Dominique Jackson.
So her it's so ridiculous. Again, it's so over the top and ridiculous, but I loved it when she left the second house. Elektra left the second house and pulled the tablecloth, you know, off the table. And, you know, Candy's like, what the fuck is your problem, bitch? And she's like, it's my new signature move.
It's also good. Those reads, just the seething venom that she spits out as she delivers these lines to people. You know, it's incredible. It actually reminds me a lot of my mother.
Oh, really? Wow.
Oh, my mother could read somebody for sure. I mean, not exactly like that. My mother's a little more, you know, I would say... dignified in some senses, but I mean, if she, you know, my mother is Irish Catholic, and it's like if anybody's going to be able to read anybody, it's them.
But one thing that sets Pose apart, I think, is that there's a temptation, especially when white cisgendered gay men are involved in a project like this, to have that you know character of Elektra just be shady all the time. Mm-hmm. you know, and there are really great moments, very tender, very nurturing moments where we see a very softer side of her. Mm-hmm. And I think because of the fact that you have trans women of color involved in writing and directing the series, that's what sets the show apart from everything else.
Absolutely. And the trans folks and the queer people involved in the creation of the show know how to walk the line so well between profound tragedy and sadness with outrageous comedy and camp. Mm. And that tone I have not seen so honestly represented as far as what to me is so inherently queer. Mm. And something we do so well, which is to support each other, to mourn together, and to fight political battles while also doing it with an extreme sense of humor and camp. And you know that this show nails it. I mean, it really does. It's just
well, and it's also not afraid to play with your heart. And so there's been teasers being posted in two episodes from now. One of the major characters.
Oh, really?
Is going to face some serious danger.
Ooh.
And might even die.
Goodbye, Big Poppy.
So people are like,
I don't know.
So this is like who's this grim, horrible conversation. And this is all the fans of the show talking about. They're like, who's going to get killed off the series? Mm. Dun, dun, dun.
Who do you think, Peaches? Who is a regular character who's going to die?
Well, I hope nobody.
Mm. Yeah, I don't want to see anybody go.
I would imagine, though, it would be strange to do Pose and not address the rampant problem of trans women of color being murdered. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm very grateful that they did not deal with that in season one. Mm-hmm. Because quite frankly, I think a lot of us were expecting it, you know, and as the season was going on, I kept thinking, oh God, I think I know who's going to end up being killed and who's going to kill her. And, you know, how could you not think that when you come from a community where you know that this is a real horrible issue that the trans community faces. Mm-hmm. And it was refreshing, I think, to for them not to actually do that storyline in season one. However,
it's coming.
I think it would be somewhat irresponsible not to do it because then it's sort of a fantasy, mm-hmm. you know? And of course, you know, they've modeled so much of the show on Paris is Burning, which mm-hmm. is obviously so joyous and celebratory and creative and magical, but also very tragic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all know that that is part of the story of Paris is Burning.
Well,
and what's mm-hmm. shocking about it is how normal it was and expected, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, you know, I don't want to give you a spoiler, but that is dealt with in the latest episode to some degree and by Peppermint. You know, from RuPaul's Drag Race. And it was really wonderful to see her on television and to see her portray that experience because, you know, violence against trans people is in the news all the time, at least in the queer news. And to see it portrayed, I'm saying, you know, how often have we really seen violence against a trans woman, you know, a sex worker portrayed on television or film? Not very often. If at all that I can think of, I'm like, when I'm watching this scene, I'm like, this is really kind of one of the first times I've ever seen this.
It's not just the violence, it's also the injustice when the police handle it.
Yes.
Too. Yeah, you see it in those sort of like crime shows and things, you know, where, mm-hmm. where, but the sex worker, the trans woman is a kind of a nameless, characterless person, you know, mm-hmm. so to have a show like Pose, where audiences who are even from outside of the community are engaged, they care about these people, they've gotten to know these women. This is a real turning point because it's going to. I mean, it's just very sad that we still live in a world where to this day in 2019, you know, a trans woman here in the Bay Area was murdered in the last few months. And while, of course, many of us shared on social media our outrage, mm-hmm. the reality of it is we still don't respond to that crime the way we would if another Matthew Shepard happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hate to say that. I hate that that's the reality, but it's true. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. white gay guy gets killed in San Francisco or murdered, and you would see marches in the streets. But, you know, a trans woman mm-hmm. of color getting murdered in Oakland, and it's kind of not, you know, a big news story. And that is mm-hmm. so fucked up.
And so next time somebody says, you know, we live in a racist society, you just you really have to listen and pay attention and see what how your actions contribute to the systematic racism that we live under.
Yeah, at this point, if people don't acknowledge that mm-hmm. or acknowledge that we have a white supremacist in the White House inspiring white supremacy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're dead to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I just have no – it's like you are willfully – ignorant. You mm-hmm. are choosing. I mean, in fact, you're a white supremacist. You know, that's how I feel.
Without a doubt. Did you hear about the cocktail server here in Chicago who spit on Eric Trump as he was in her
no.
bar?
Yeah.
So she was taken off by the Secret Service, and I'm not sure what's happening with her now and stuff like that. But, you know, it's, you know, violence is never okay. But in this sense, I'm kind of like, I'll give you a pass, girl, because it's like, you know, I mean, to think about what her father's done, to think about how this whole family is, how they behave and how aberrant their actions are, that, you know, it's, you get yeah, spitting by somebody
is nothing. Who cares? I love it. When I was in London and I was there, it was in England for a long mm-hmm. time, like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
There was this series of, direct actions against the conservatives over there where they were milkshaking them, mm-hmm. which was like they would find these people, you know, from the Tory party or whatever in the street and throw a milkshake on them.
Yeah,
and
I love it.
You know, it just was designed to humiliate them. And, you know, people were, and it was the same thing, like so upset about it. But, you know, ultimately it's like, yeah, well, whatever. These assholes are, you know, doing way worse mm-hmm. to people than throwing a milkshake on someone.
Well, here in the United States, we also have concentration camps. It's interesting to see, like, Republicans get upset because they're like, well, you know, our concentration camps are not as bad as Auschwitz, as if that's like an argument. And there's one aspect of Trump and supporting Republicans, but this is on us. As Americans mm-hmm. living here, if we don't stop this, this is our stain. This is our crime.
Somebody said the best way to support these people is to pay their bail. I didn't know you could get them out of, you could bail a lot of these people out from the concentration camps. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's what thing, somebody said, but I don't know. I saw it on Facebook somewhere, so I'm going to investigate further. Because it's like these people, we have to get them out. It's inexcusable in 2019 that we would have this kind of thing.
It allows these corrupt politicians to stay in power for their base to know that they're torturing and murdering innocent people. And that's just blows my mind. It's devastating. And so it throws everything wonderful that the United States does out the window, because now the United States will always be known. We have concentration camps in 2019.
Mm. It's a horror movie. Yeah.
It is a horror movie. Peaches, I want to congratulate San Francisco, and they just voted unanimously on Tuesday to formally establish the Castro District as an LGBTQ cultural district.
They did?
They did.
Yay!
Yep, yeah, they're renaming it Fagland.
Wow!
Fagland!
No, I think that's exciting. You know, we have one here in Chicago. I think the Boys Town was the first gay village in the United States, and that was done like I think the 80s or 90s or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow.
So it's been
yeah,
a long
time coming. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's not really a surprise. Mm. You know, one thing I have to say, I am so excited to be celebrating Pride, mm-hmm. and you know, I really love going to the Frameline Film Festival and seeing movies that inspire, you know, our community to celebrate each other or to, mm-hmm. to take political action or whatever. However, I am also sort of like rolling my eyes at the amount of corporate and political base, what I think is pandering to the queer community by slapping, you know, rainbows on everything. While I think it is, and I agree with people who believe it is progress, I also kind of question their motives as far as are you really in this because you want us to have equal rights and you support our rights as queer people, or do you just want us to buy your shit? And, you know, I feel like at this point, our community really needs to take them to task. Like, okay, well, how many of you are actually writing a check to the Frameline Film Festival? Mm-hmm. How many of you are writing a check to a lobbying group? How many of you corporations are doing anything to support trans women of color? You know, what we're, you know, you say you support our community. You love having your floats in our parade. You'll spend tons of money to put rainbow shit on all of your crap. But I don't, you know, it's starting to really bother me,
yeah.
Because when it comes to the Women's March, you don't see that sort of excitement. And when it comes to, you know, Black History Month or Latino Month or mm-hmm. any other, you know, minority group, you don't see the same sort of enthusiasm. And I don't know that I have the answer. I just know that it's sort of rubbing me the wrong way.
Well, it almost seems as though they're trying to, you know, hijack the agenda, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like we have a fucking monster in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you are helping us, you know, with every fiber of your being, you know, get rid of that administration. If you are a corporation who, you know, wants to send rainbow flags down Market Street in the gay pride parade, but you're not actively helping us, you know, keep abortion safe and legal, and you're not helping us, you know, get young people out to vote or, you know, to keep gay marriage intact, then I don't really buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just saying, yeah, we'll be pro-gay so that you'll buy our stuff.
Without a doubt. You know, Pittsburgh Pride, there was a fracking company that was in their parade. A fracking company. What the hell does a fracking company have to do with, you know, being in
And how does that align with queer people's values? Mm-hmm. I mean, who in that parade is for fracking?
Exactly.
Nobody's for fracking. Part of it is like, I'm willing to accept the Pride Parade being a platform for advertising if they are putting money back into the hands of LGBTQ people. And what bothers me is times that I've seen these floats, these marketing events, you know that none of those people are from the community and they have no interaction with us except that point in juncture. Mm-hmm. Here's an example too. Google, who runs YouTube, has been criticized for a lot of allowing hate speech to flourish on their platform. People like us, we don't do so well compared to heterosexual or cisgendered content creators on the platform because they unfairly penalize us just for being queer. And
right.
And so was announced about an hour ago. 100 Google employees have petitioned the organizer of San Francisco Pride to kick the company out of the celebration.
People who work for Google want Google out.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. interesting. I mean, I can say, because I'm just waiting for someone to take me to task for some of the Pride endorsements that I've done, one of which was this company, Kiva, who's doing edible marijuana, and me and Heclina and Laganja were asked to help design a Pride edible. And so, you know, first and foremost, I basically said to them, like, well, I don't smoke pot and I'm sober. And they were like, that's fine. You know, you can design the flavor, design the color, design the packaging. Without the THC, because I made it very clear that I'm very pro marijuana and mm-hmm. I'm very pro the legalization of marijuana, and I am, and I want to support that. So what the deal with me and Heclina was, and we talked, and it wasn't that we didn't include Laganja. We actually didn't know they were approaching her until after it was all done. But Heclina and I talked a lot about it, and we said to them, that in order for us to do this, there would need to be a community component. And what I loved about that, the Kiva group, was they said, oh, yes, we've already set aside $10,000 each for each of you. So I guess 30,000. And it's, you know, you each in your name, the donation will be made. So Heclina donated 10 grand to the LGBT Historical Society. I donated 10 grand to the Harvey Milk Center for the Arts for the creation of a black box theater. And Laganja donated her 10 grand. That to me is how you do these things. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see and to know, like the Google employees are taking Google to task. I would love to know every company, every corporation, all these groups that are marching in these parades. Let's really look at what you've done to protect your queer employees. Let's really look at what you've done to support queer rights in your community. And some of them have done great things. Some of them have. You know, so we want to support them, but mm-hmm. I like the idea of holding them accountable because some of them have not, you mm-hmm. know.
At least, you know, give out merch that we want. you know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's just like a plastic, you know, instead of giving you like a bag of candy, they give you the corporate logo on a piece of plastic or a card. And I'm like, that is so lame.
It's just landfill.
Yeah. I'm like,
it's just marketing landfill. That's just, it's not going to get recycled. Mm-hmm. It's not going to, you know, it's just going to end up in the bay, in the river mm-hmm. in Chicago or whatever. And it's just crap.
One of the funniest things that Fausto does is like after the parade, there's literally just garbage everywhere from all the crap that people have been handing out and stuff like that. And Fausto will go to people who's like, okay, grab that broom over there and start sweeping up to like just random people. And they're just, some of them are like, are you serious? Like, I have to clean up after the parade?
Yes, fag.
Well, you just grab a broom and you start asking people to help you clean up the mess. And they're all like in shock. Mm-hmm. It's like, somebody is going to do this, right? Mm-hmm. And you just kind of walk around right. with Lady Bunny's voice. It's like, won't somebody help me clean up this mess? Please. This is my home. I live here. Have you ever been pressured to do, I mean, we, you know, throughout our career, like been pressured to have a float in the Pride Parade. And we just can't afford something like that.
No, not really. I've been asked to. In the early days, it was more affordable to have a float. And yeah, Heclita used to have a tranny shack float that we would all go down the parade on. But it got more and more expensive over the years. I honestly think that as the corporations became more involved in the parade, the parade actually made the cost of doing the parade unaffordable for the actual local bars and businesses and stuff. So now you really just see the big corporations or the nonprofits who get like a
discount, yeah,
you know, a different rate or whatever.
How much does a float cost for a parade?
Yeah. So when I've done the parades more recently, what I've done is Peaches has been part of the parade as a nonprofit, you know, I guess not a spokesperson, but like someone who's there celebrating, you know, Shanti or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're always crashing floats and just pretending that we're part of the parade.
Uh-huh.
And part of it is like, you know, you don't have to register anything. You just crash the parade and pretend like you're in it. Nobody needs to permission to do it. I mean, it's nice if you get permission and it's nice to organize it, but you could just, you know, walk in
and start walking with people. Yeah. They usually don't throw you out, but you know, you never know. They might.
If you look like you belong and if you're in a costume, they'll let you do it. If you're just like some drunk person, like, hey, well, look at me. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm.
This year, Nihat and I are marching with our fantastic neighbors, Mrs. Vera and her Vera Sphere contingent, and we're really excited. Mrs. Vera is Grand Marshal of the parade. Aww. And for any of the listeners who don't know Mrs. Vera or Vera Sphere, they create incredible, colorful, dynamic, outrageous costumes and looks, and have been doing this for years and years in San Francisco. And really kind of are always my favorite part of the parade. And a documentary about them just got picked up by our PBS station, KQED, and is on YouTube. So if you look up the movie Vera Sphere, a love story in costume, you can check them out. And what I'm excited about is, like, I get to be a member of Verisphere and to walk in the parade, not as Peaches, but as one of these other sort of, like, alien, you know, creatures. And, you know, to be there to celebrate and support Mrs. Vera. It's a big moment. You know, it's so exciting that she's been acknowledged by SF Pride as a Grand Marshal.
That's fantastic. And it's like you get to take a little vacation from yourself, too, huh?
Yes, exactly.
And be something else for the day.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned the Frameline Film Festival, and I saw on Facebook that you had just seen Trixie Mattel's documentary, Moving Parts.
Yes, I moderated the Q&A with Trixie and the producer, David Silver, who's also her lover.
Oh!
Did they fall in love while they were making the movie?
No, they were dating beforehand, and David, you know, was always a filmmaker, and, you know, someone in Trixie's life, I believe it was her manager, Diana, at the time, suggested to David, like, you know, if anyone's going to make a documentary about this upcoming year she has, because she had so many exciting things coming up, like her Vice TV show and her big world tour. Mm-hmm. It should be someone who's close to her that she's going to trust in order to get that sort of really intimate access. And David produced it, but he didn't direct it. He had someone else, you know, do the camera work and direct it. And I have to say, having not seen it before, I was really, really impressed with how raw and intimate and real it is. I mean, almost sometimes hard to watch. She gave them access to everything. And when I say everything, I mean, like, it's, you know, it's...
Is there nudity?
No, not in an exciting way. Lots of painful looking corseting and, you know, tights and pad pushing, but nothing, nothing, titillating. It's more honest about the emotional
toll.
Peaks and valleys of this life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's got the episode of them, you know, filming the Trixie and Katya show for Viceland where, you know, Katya has a meltdown. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's in the movie. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to watch, but I'm so glad that it was in there because I said to Trixie afterwards, I was like, you know, having seen the way some fans treat you guys as if you're not real people anymore, as if you are these things that they, you know, they assume exist the way they see you in a 5-minute YouTube clip, you know, of, and they assume you're that all the time running into you in the street. I mean, I've been with Trixie where she's out of drag and we're eating, you know, lunch or something. And, you know, the access fans want to these girls is so intense. And I think a movie like this might be a great reminder that they're real people.
I'm not an animal. I am a human. No. I am a man.
Yeah. Real people. You know, yeah. Dealing with real shit.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying that it's sort of the documentary sort of explores the tension between sort of being a do-it-yourself entertainer and navigating the complicated world of fandom where sort of you're putting yourself into a product. You're sort of exploiting yourself to some degree. And, you know, you don't have the resources that someone like Madonna would have to filter that stuff out.
Yes, I would say that that's part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, another part of it's just that it's just deeply personal about who Trixie is and the way she thinks and her background and where she comes from. I mean, there's stuff in the movie about her family that I was very surprised to see. I mean, maybe because we're close friends. And, you know, I've lived with Trixie for a summer and I've, you know, just we've been close. You know, she called me when that Viceland thing was happening with Katya. Mm-hmm. And it was a, how do I describe it? It was heartbreaking, you know, to talk to your friend going through this. I could not believe that the film showed all of that. I mean, it's very powerful. It's very powerful. And it really Like, if you're looking for what it's really like to be Trixie Mattel behind the curtain, this movie is going to show you. And she's so brave in a lot of ways because she said, of course I didn't want any of that shit to be included in the movie. It goes against everything I am and do as an entertainer. But I knew that if it was going to be a real documentary, I had to let them make the movie they wanted to make. And Katya gave her blessing on it as well. And I think it's going to be very, very powerful because to see someone literally struggling with mental illness and addiction, you know, that she would, it's a very good movie. It's very, very well done.
What kind of advice do you give a friend when they have a moment like that? Because I know you've given that to us and to Trixie. And I know that a lot of people call you when things go down. And I think it's important to talk about that right here.
God, I guess it would depend on the specifics of the situation. I mean, if you're talking specifically about when dealing with a close friend or loved one who's in the throes of addiction, mm-hmm. Or alcoholism, I very strongly recommend the philosophies of Al-Anon. And whether you can bring yourself to an Al-Anon meeting or not, I know enough about Al-Anon to at least suggest to people that you have no control over this and you cannot fix this person. And this is not your fault. And this is something you have to accept is this person's journey. And the sooner you can separate and actually allow the person to fail on their own, the more likely they are to hit bottom and get help. I think the hardest part as friends, and I have this too, is I'm codependent with people. I want to help people. I want to be there for them. But when you're dealing with an addict or an alcoholic who's in deep, that's actually not helping them. And that's very, very hard to understand. And it's actually why I think a program like Al-Anon is so powerful, because you get to go and get that kind of support from other people. And I've seen repeatedly where people who break those codependent ties not only help themselves, but they do help the other person.
Mm, without a doubt. Well, you know, you are a great friend to so many people, and you're a great friend to us. And I want to thank you for always coming on the podcast when we ask you. You've always been there for us, because I think, gosh, we've known you for 11 or 12 years now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Amazing. I remember doing podcasts. Like, I was thinking about it. I was like, God, I did podcasts with them when I lived way back in blah, blah, blah apartments. So it's like 12 years, mm-hmm. I think. You know, at least 11 or 12.
Yeah, it's amazing. So
have you moved since that place? Or I imagine that
I think you're living in the place that we visited.
Yeah.
But we probably didn't visit
your place. I don't know. Yeah. I think when we first started talking, you never came to that apartment. Mm-hmm. It was in the Castro.
Well, we know plenty of people who have.
Oh, yeah. I was the welcome wagon.
Welcome to San Francisco. I'm your treat or your trick.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, I don't want to dwell on that, because I actually would rather talk about the fact that I'm a documentary hog. Apparently, I appear in more films in the Fairyland Film Festival than any other subject this year.
So you're in more documentaries in the Fairyland Film Festival than anybody else?
Apparently, that's what they were telling me last night.
A docu-hog you are?
Is that what yeah, it is? I'm a docu-hog. I'm in the trailer, which runs every day. So I'm in the trailer. Mm-hmm. I'm in a movie called You Don't Know Me, which plays tomorrow night. It's a documentary about the movie Showgirls.
Yay.
What? That yes. sounds amazing.
Oh, yes. And I'm in that. It's a deep, it's actually surprisingly kind of dark in a way. It's a very deep analysis of the film. And it's a pretty deep dive. And I actually didn't expect, you know, I actually did interviews for two Showgirls documentaries. The other one is a fantastic movie that's coming out called Goddess that Jeffrey Schwartz is making. And that film is sort of more the documentary that I would have expected, and Vito and so many great movies. But, you know, I was filmed for it. This movie, You Don't Know Me, I never met the filmmaker. I've never met him in person. He interviewed me on the phone. The whole movie is audio.
Oh, wow.
And what it's are they showing in behind the audio?
It's all clips from either the movie itself or news footage from the when the movie came out, interviews, press clippings. It's fascinating. It's a totally unique, and if you like the way I'm describing it, it's probably not selling it, but I'll tell you that having seen the movie, because they sent me a screener, I was very, very impressed. I mean, it premiered at Tribeca, you know, and it got picked up. It's being distributed. It's getting a theatrical release.
Ooh,
it's crazy.
It.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, you don't know me. I'm in Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street, which is a documentary about Mark Patton, the star of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2. I'm in Vera Sphere, the movie that I just recommended everyone look up on YouTube. And I'm in another doc about Mrs. Doubtfire.
What do you contribute to that one?
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I look forward to that too.
Wait a minute. So you don't even remember, you're like Gwyneth Paltrow. You don't even remember the film you were making.
Well, I remember, you know, I'll say this, and I don't know if the filmmaker would be annoyed about me saying this. I remember feeling like he was frustrated that I wasn't giving him the answers he thought I was going to give, if that makes sense. I think that the movie he was making, you know, he was a fan of Mrs. Doubtfire. It was an important movie to him growing up. And I think he saw it as a celebration of drag. And I remember in my interview saying, I did not see it that way, you know.
It's cross-dressing more than drag, right?
Well, it's basically, to me, another example of Hollywood saying, we know that audiences want to see drag. They want to enjoy drag, but much like Some Like It Hot or Tootsie, let's take every bit of queerness out of it, make them super straight and give some sort of ridiculous, completely implausible scenario wherein they are forced into doing drag. You know, the mob is going to kill you, or you know, you need, in order for you to be on this soap opera to get to this woman you love, you know, and in Mrs. Doubtfire's case, you know, it's so heteronormative, right? It's like, you can't see your children unless you dress up as this old lady. You know, no one's going to do it. The one thing about Mrs. Doubtfire that stands apart from those other movies is that, and I bet, I wouldn't wonder, but I bet it was Robin Williams who insisted on this, that he goes to his gay brother and his gay brother's partner, played by Harvey Fierstein and Scott Capurro, for the makeup and the actual art of putting him in drag. Was it, at least there was a queer representation there.
Sure. Well, you know, I think for straight people too, it's like, you know, like you say, it's like getting forced into this. It's like, it's, you know, there's a fetish out there, forced feminization, where like these guys have this, like it's, they get off on this idea of like, it's a type of humiliation. Like, oh, I have to wear this little sissy girl outfit. And, you know, the dominatrix is going to beat me if I don't behave, and I better not come yet. You know, it's all these weird tropes like that.
Well, that's like accidental homosexuality too. For a lot of straight guys, it's hilarious to see their friends accidentally kiss a guy or dress up as a woman or anything that sort of, you know, knocks down their masculinity. It's funny to them. And so when you're doing a comedy, usually the genesis of the humors is by putting a macho man in a tutu, like Hulk Hogan and so on and so forth. Peaches, where are you going to be this Pride weekend? It's 50th anniversary. What are you going to wear?
Well, I'm going to be wearing a costume by Mrs. Vera, and I'll be marching with the Vera Sphere contingent in the San Francisco Pride Parade.
Amazing.
And what am I doing? It's on Saturday. So tomorrow night is the You Don't Know Me documentary, and then Saturday is the Scream Queen documentary, and then Sunday is the parade.
And what shows are you working at? You have a couple of shows coming this summer?
Yes. So I'm doing our first ever Bring It On parody called Bring It On Queen, starring Bob the drag queen and Monet Exchange as rival cheer captains.
Aww.
And I'm practicing. They're going to throw me up in the air. I'm doing a somersault in the air.
For real?
Yeah, totally.
For real?
Shit. Eureka is shook.
Of course not. I could barely walk.
I was like, that sounds like flashbacks of that episode of Drag Race where half the cast like broke their legs.
They were right. No, we do have actual cheer folks in the show. Mm. So there will be cheer stunts. And, you know, obviously it's a very high energy, dance heavy show. So I'm actually playing multiple characters who don't dance in the show. So
I heard that you're also bringing back Rosa, the high school, Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion.
Well, we just did a staged reading of the Romeo and Michelle script as part of this big comedy festival, Clusterfest. Mm-hmm. And Trixie and Katya and I basically were looking, we all want to do the show again. So we were looking at our calendars to see when the three of us had a window. And I think we found something. So if you missed that show in San Francisco and you want to see it again, or if you're interested in seeing it possibly in some other cities, we may have some good news coming soon.
And Into the Dark is coming back this fall, and you've added a new element to it, a zombie escape room.
Yes. Yeah. So we're busy over at the Bint building as we speak. And it's really cool. I have an office now at the San Francisco Mint building. Oh. And, you know, I'm there really whenever I can be. I'm there. And I have to say, I'm just like a kid watching another dream of mine come true, like watching this haunted house be put up that, you know, is completely from my mind and my collaborator David Flower's mind, where it's like, okay, you know, we have these big empty scary rooms, like what are we going to do with them? And, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but like, oh my God, I'm telling you the listeners, you don't want to miss this show if you can catch it. Like, if last year we did great, we got great reviews, but this year I'm really trying to raise the bar. And, you know, I don't know, what can I tell you? That, well, one of my favorite sequences is a whole bordello scene, which is going to include male nudity.
Well, all right.
Wow.
Jizz Mopper returns.
That's right. Peaches. Oh, and the other attraction is, like you said, it's called Apocalypse, and the year is 1985, and you are sent to the basement of the Mint where the vaccine has been stored. But because it's the zombie apocalypse, we need you and your group of eight people to go through this experience and unlock multiple checkpoints in order to access the vaccine. So basically, you're making your way through, and you're wearing this bit of technology on your arm that's basically like a human video game, so that when you make your way through, when zombies grab you or attack you, you actually can monitor your life on your arm, because it decreases every time a zombie gets to you. And what you're doing is you're checking into these checkpoints with your armband, but in order to do so, you have to solve a bunch of puzzles, and you know, you have a time limit in each zone. So it's very intense, very escape room heavy, and you know, it involves immersive environments and live actors. And when we've tested it, we've already been told it's too scary.
Wow.
So we'll see.
Most importantly, what's Strawberry Shortcake doing these days?
Well, Strawberry's up in Seattle, probably performing, and I believe working at Pony. I saw Strawberry when we did Mean Gaze in Boise a few weeks ago, and she was doing really well, and she's very, very grateful because I allowed her to keep her mustache for the show.
Aww. You're like, it's Boise, you can keep it.
Well, it was more that she was worried she wouldn't, you know, get trade during Pride.
That's so important, you know? Like, people don't realize the sacrifice drag queens make in shaving their face.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's a in Miss Black for President, there's an actor who's in drag, part of the show, Patrick Andrews, who physically sounds and looks like exactly like Strawberry Shortcake.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
To it's the point, Strawberry Shortcake.
Shortcake, yeah. Am I mispronouncing it?
Well, you said shortcake.
Shortcake.
Yeah. Shart. That's his Puerto Rican accent.
Shart cake. Mm-hmm. Anyways, she they look almost identical. They could do like a, you could get them together and do like a Freaky Friday. Really freaky, if you know what I mean.
I think I do, and I'm not going to indulge you.
How often do you make it to Houston? Because there's a suburb in Houston called Sugarland, and they were doing some excavating, building suburbs, and much like Poltergeist, they found a massive grave underneath it of at least 80-some bodies.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've not been to Houston in a while, but that sounds exciting.
She's like, can I get it into one of my rides or performances, haunted houses?
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, happy Halloween.
Thank you. I know it's right around the corner.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride. Well, for you, it's Halloween starting now. Well, how long have you been working?
Drag season starts now and ends around Halloween.
Yeah, for sure.
This is the busy time of the year for a lot of drag. People don't realize that, like, the Pride season sort of begins it, and then the Halloween sort of dovetails for a working drag queen is their
most of the gigs. Yeah, well, you know, it's definitely June and October are the busy months.
Yeah. Girl, it's time to get...
When people need a good scare.
Don't be throwing no shade. I just want to get paid.
Right.
Well, Peaches, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and I hope
you guys... Thank you for having me.
Of course, anytime, you're welcome to.
I wish we could be hanging out with you this Pride. Mark's going to be looking real cute.
I'm still working on my outfit.
We'll take lots of pictures.
Definitely, yes. We usually do.
I'm dressing up as a butterfly.
Yes, and I'll take pictures of me in my Vera Sphere costume. Mm. It's really ridiculous.
I can't wait to see it.
It's going
to
be hot.
Yeah, a Nihat's a costume. They outfitted him. He is going to look so adorable.
Aw, that's amazing. It's going to be like 80 degrees here, I think. And
oh, wow.
Maybe it'll rain on us. I don't know. We'll see.
You know, it's never that bad.
In Chicago?
Yeah, it's everyone's like, oh, my God, it's so hot. I'm like, eh.
I beg to differ.
I'm from Puerto Rico. I lived in Texas for a long time. It's never as bad. As it could
be. Actually, it's only going to be 76 here, so it'll be pretty decent.
Yeah.
It'll be lovely.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy it.
Thank you. You enjoy it, too.
Take care, Peaches.
Thanks, bye-bye. You guys. Bye-bye.
Peaches Christ lives in San Francisco, California. You can visit her at peacheschrist.com.
Mm-hmm. You could probably see more about her, too, at intothedark.com. Hopefully, I can make it out there to San Francisco because I really want to experience her horror house.
Yeah, it's like it has more photos of Peaches Christ in it than ever.
It's so scary.
What was the joke that you said? She said she had been to a horror house. It was the most frightening horror house she had ever seen.
It was a Facebook update of hers that said basically that. And I said, did it have a lot of mirrors in it? She's just like, you bitch. It's important to, you know, to kind of to read a queen.
Well, we'll be walking in the parade, and if you see us, make sure you take a picture of us.
Yeah.
Or not, or tag us. Give us
a hug. Free dad hugs. I'm going to do one of those things that says free dad hugs. I'm going to pretend like I'm a straight person who accepts gays, so that people are like, I love you. Thank you for loving. And I'm like, I'm really gay. And they'll be like, oh.
Get away from me. Thank you for accepting us.
I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. If you're not a Feast of Fun Plus member yet today, what's your problem?
The problem is they don't know where to go.
Oh.
Just go to feastoffun.com/plus and access 15 years of amazing podcasts. Or support us on Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun, where you can see clips and sneak previews of upcoming Cooking with Drag Queens with Peaches Christ.
Yay!
Who's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Why not be on Cooking with Drag Queens, too?
Why not?
Listen, it's one of the best episodes yet, and she gets to masturbate a vegetable.
Mm.
It's quite erotic.
Quite erotic.
And delicious.
I also want to remind folks, too, that we've got our store at feastoffun.com/store. Get yourself a mug, a t-shirt, a tote bag. All of it goes to support this podcast.
We're able to be here because of you, the listeners. You guys have made this show possible. It really means a lot when you guys take a little bit of time to support us and include us in your projects and share the podcast with your friends. It means the world to us. And we're looking forward to seeing you guys at Pride. If you're going to be there, wave us down, honey. We're looking forward to seeing you.
Happy Pride.
Bye, everyone. Bye.